you tall, tall trees and all the waters and the seas. I'm a fool, fool, fool for you.
Talking Trees with ISA Certified Arborist John Eisenhower and Steve, Stephen Price. We have a laundry list of to-dos here for tree prep as we're leading into the summer, but there was one more little feature about our sugar bush you wanted to mention as it relates to the color and the bloom.
Yeah, we just forgot to mention that for all those people that love blooms, that they have a beautiful late winter or spring bloom. It's usually kind of a pinkish color. I believe if you look close, it's more white with some red in there. So then when you look at it from a distance, it gives you that pinkish color on the bloom. So, yeah, definitely want to mention that for all the people who love the blooms.
Yeah. Speaking of which, it's really nice to have when you begin your planning for your new landscape installation. For those of you who are moving into a new home and you're kind of beginning to plan out your landscape, to be thinking about the bloom cycle. And if it's a spring blooming plant, a spring blooming plant, or a fall blooming plant, also take note of the color of the bloom, so that if you want to try to organize the landscape in such a way that you have something blooming all year long, it's wonderful. A lot of people put a lot of plants in their yard and then they leave the valley in April and May, just when all their plants are coming into bloom, and they're never even here to enjoy that beautiful bloom cycle. So keep that in mind, that you want to be studying that information. A good place to start would be the AMWA website, the Arizona Municipal Water Users Association website, amwua.org, amwua.org. They have a great digital format plant palette. And you can go through and they'll tell you all about the bloom cycles of all the trees, shrubs, and flowers, ground covers. So you can start there as to begin your planning of your landscape.
And this is the time of year Arizona is a yellow state. Those Palo Verde blooms are everywhere.
Yes, sure.
And I we're driving, looking at the saguaros. We're getting ready to turn into a white state as all those saguaro tops bloom here when we get into June. And I think it's going to be a really good year for the saguaro harvest. We had a nice wet winter, lots of water stored up in the saguaro. I think we're going to see a great bloom.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, you already see it popping everywhere. And yeah, it's beautiful when we have that nice wet fall and winter. It produces a wonderful spring bloom. A lot of people who are have allergies and don't really care for all that bloom are they're saying, no, no more. But yeah, it is. There's a trade-off there with that heavy bloom. We have a lot of a lot of pollen in the air, and also that heavy winter rain brings a lot of weeds. So we've been dealing with weeds, more weeds. Seems like I've gone out in my yard and I thought I plucked out all those weeds, and I come back a week later and they're a foot high. Again, I do have this kind of a mulch base, so it's a very easy place for weeds to root. But thank goodness they're also easy to pull up. Because if you put down a bunch of wood chips all over your yard, the weeds can get in there, but they're so easy to pull out, as opposed to the desert, the clay desert soil. And those roots get in there, and that soil dries out. You need something to dig them out with, a hula hoe or something more drastic, like a stick of dynamite or something.
I had to run up to the White Mountains Thursday over to Little Nutrioso, Arizona. And so I drove through most of those geozones you were talking about. And the yellow between Saguaro Lake and Sunflower is absolutely
unbelievable.
It is absolutely stunning. It is gorgeous. And every reservoir between Payson and Greer is filled to the brim.
Beautiful.
And every forest is closed to forest fires.
Wow. Wow.
And that's a COVID situation. I asked the Forest Service guy up in Alpine. I said, what's that about? This is as green as I've ever seen it. I've been here 50 years. He said, well, we can't risk having a project fire that involves setting up
base
mess halls and base camps and
putting
all those guys that close together.
Sure.
So we've just shut the forest down for fires now just to avoid that situation.
But the forest is getting a break here because it's
it's getting a big drink, man. It's absolutely gorgeous. This is a beautiful time of year to take a little take a little scenic drive right now.
Well, you know, I do love that place right when you go past the Four Peaks turnoffs, the Sore Lake turnoff, and you climb up that big boulder pile. And when you top up on the top of that and drop down into that first canyon, you look over onto the right side. That's one of my first memories as a 10-year-old. You know, when we moved here and just coming up over that top of that hill and looking down into that first little valley on the right. So beautiful.
Mesquite Wash.
Is that right?
That's right.
Okay.
Mesquite Wash.
That's my favorite place. That's a great drive. In fact, if you want to, you know, go up there, you could just go up and down that highway two or three times in a day. Go down, come back up, go down, go back, you know, just to get the drive and see the flowers, you know. It's a beautiful place.
And that's a great spot for saguaros as well once the bloom comes.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, thousands on that.
All along that whole drive up there for the next, you know, 15 or 20 miles is just nothing. But, in fact, we call that one mountain, we call it Pincushion Mountain because it just has all those saguaros on it. You know, that one on the left side that's a big volcanic one as you head to about 4 or 5 miles from that top of that little hill.
Take your camera. If you're looking to start a desert landscape, that would be a great time. Snap the picture so you can talk to arborists and local nurseries about what plants you're looking at. When you get out and start looking, there are thousands of different plants. You just don't even realize all the different varieties that are right there. And if you head up that way, you can turn off at Pumpkin Center. Is Apache Trail open back up? Did they get that?
Nope. Fish Creek is closed.
So you'd have to come down and back home through Superior. But still, you could stop at Boyce Thompson on your way back.
I was going to say, I was going to put in a plug for Boyce Thompson. I don't know how if they have limited openings for some of these parks, like Desert Botanical Garden and Boyce Thompson Arboretum. But do check with them. Call before you go. But I know they're open for business. But I think they might be limiting the numbers of peoples and practicing some social distancing. But.
And for an arboretum, they actually sell plants, too.
Sure. Oh, yeah. That's a great place. I was going to say Boyce Thompson is just a great place for purchasing plants. And, get up there. They'll give you lots of, you know, that'll give you lots of inspiration and ideas for coming back and putting something in your landscape.
Now, I've got a number of text questions that have come in. But before we rifle through all of those, on our talking trees, we're talking about preparing our trees for the summer. If they're new trees, we don't have deep roots, thick canopies. We see a lot of trees blown over this time of year.
Yeah, this is your time to do a little bit of a storm preparation. And Steve and I deal with this every day of the week. And Steve was talking about his passion being structural pruning of young trees. And that really has been our calling card at Integrity Tree Service and now with Save a Tree, is to do really good structural pruning of trees. So the best thing you can do to prepare your trees for summer is to alleviate end weight and not to lion tail trees. We don't want to strip out all the interior foliage with the thought that we're going to let the air wind blow through the middle, because then the force of the wind collects unevenly in the outer third of the canopy, and that makes your trees even more vulnerable to getting pulled over.
So I have a mulberry that I'm really trying hard not to lion tail. But the reason we're trimming the interior is because it's the climbing tree. So do I just have to keep that thinning all the way out to the edge so that the wind blows
through
it? Well,
just don't do so much thinning until the tree's a little bit bigger. I know you're tempted to make that a climbing tree sooner, but you want to be sure that there's enough branches above the interior so that when you do trim out the interior branches, you have adequate protection from the sun.
So. You say tall. That tree's 30 feet tall now.
Okay. All right. It's getting tall enough. Well, you can take out some of that. You do want to have a climbing tree, because I had a mulberry climbing tree for my kids about your kids' age, and it is a lot of fun.
The thing is, what happens in the storms is all the structural defects show up. That's why we see all the broken branches and even the, you know, sometimes they'll just blow right off, you know, a couple feet from the ground even and break off, because maybe there was a problem when it was younger, it wasn't taken care of, and it seals over that, you don't see it, and then even the trunk blows apart. So, yeah, the sooner you can get in there and take care of those structural defects, you're really proving sustainability, and then you try to prevent those. Again, when the storms come, the defects are going to show up no matter what.
Storm prep. And then for younger trees, we see a lot of improperly staked trees to start off with that doesn't let them build their strength, and they take the supports off, and they're the first ones that, you said, defect by planter error.
Yeah, if you have a new tree that you've put into your landscape recently, quite often they'll come with what's called a travel stake. And it's a stake that's actually taped right to the trunk of the tree. That usually should come off as soon as the tree's planted in its final destination. That's why they're called a travel stake. Their only purpose is to get them to their final destination. But once they're in the ground, take that travel stake off. If the tree's stable enough to stand up on its own, you should leave it alone, because that's the best thing for the tree to begin to move in the wind gently, and it'll send a message to the roots to get active in the soil. But if you feel like it's a little bit too top heavy, you can gently tie it to a stake. You know, put the stakes in just outside the planting pit, put a couple of stakes into the side, and then with a soft tie material of some sort, tie it loosely. The stakes are there to prevent catastrophic failure. They're not there to prevent it from moving. The tree should have a little bit of movement on the staking system. There's an art to installing a stake properly. You don't want to tie it so rigidly that the tree just sits there and can never move. But you don't want it to be so loose that it pulls the staking system over either. So you want to hold it firmly but gently, and usually we use a very soft tie material. Old T-shirts are kind of nice. You want to tear some nice strips off of those. They make a really nice, soft. See, it's not gonna tear the bark up.
I like
up.
That. Yeah.
You put wire and stuff around them, and it's gonna tear the bark up of the trees real quick. Even if you put a wire through a piece of hose, that wire is in there inside. They're putting a lot of pressure on the cambium. So we use a nylon, 1-inch nylon webbing is our typical product we use, but if you have a small tree, a little bit of T-shirt material can work as well.
And you see that mistake made a lot on desert native plants, because they're trying to get them to grow up. And in their natural environment, they're more likely to grow out as a bush shrub type. And we're trying to grow them straight to make these shade trees over top. So they bring them and they put them out, and they've got a real weak, tall limb. And they just, you know, you see those stakes and it's completely suspended. It can't even move. Which is how it builds its strength. Sure. So you almost see, all right, they're going to be replacing this in a year, 2 years, 3 years. And a native tree, you should never have to replace if you plant it right properly.
Sure, and those, most of our desert trees have a weeping growth habit. The trees branches want to grow out and down, out and down. And you should, if you can, put that tree into a setting where you can allow those lower branches to stay on the tree. It's going to be much more beneficial to the landscape and also to the tree over time. It's hard to train those trees up to make them like a shade tree, because they want to keep defying your ability to make them grow up.